J6, number 11A.
Okay, so we see then that how does that ideal standard appear when it's misunderstood? Well, we say that it's an error, or it's a lie. It appears as a falsehood to our situation. That ideal standard, which is right for the situation, can appear as what we call a lie or a falsehood because it's not understood. When the ideal standard comes maybe to a consciousness that believes in an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth or revenge, it would take that standard as a lie, as a falsehood. It would deny it as not right. So therefore it is misunderstood and it becomes a falsehood, something that we take as an error, as not right. And therefore it appears as sickness. Always when we don't adhere to truth, it limits us. It confines us. It breaks up the system. And therefore we lose that wholeness. We lose that gestalt. The oceanicness is lost. Once the gestalt is broken up or the standard is broken up. We saw how Max showed it so nicely in the Oneness book, how it becomes the drop of waters, that sickness. It divides it up, huh? Loses its wholeness. Sickness is just falling out of order, falling out of wholeness. It's a breaking up. So once one acknowledges the whole standard, welcomes the whole standard, adheres to the whole standard, then we have health, wholeness, because health is just from the same root as wholeness. So wholeness is health and division is sickness. The system becomes sick. It doesn't work anymore. All right, then we go on to the seventh day, where we had that tone of resting in action, really that sense of love, where we say, well, the love which is God is our love. We have no other love than the love which is God. So therefore, we can ask, well, what is love? Well, the biblical writer showed that through the sense of creation, finished and rested, interpreted metaphysically as fulfillment, peace, the perfection of completely integrated being, which causes us to accept and acknowledge the present perfection of being, resting in God's plan of salvation. So we say, all right then, that love which is God is our love. We have no other love. Now, what does love know about itself, column 1, on page 77 in the study aid? It only knows itself as perfection. Therefore, that love which is God is our love. We have no other standard of perfection than the standard of perfection which is love. And therefore, that love, that standard of perfection brings the brotherhood of man, which brings integrated being. You see how truth flows into love? That truth now becomes our standard of perfection. That becomes love. It's a truth which is in the realm of love. It becomes that standard of love is like a realm. It's the realm where the standard of perfection goes on, in the realm of love, in the realm of integrated being. See, love isn't a quality like we had in life, to love so much the truth that of life, that we lay down our mortal concept for life. That's a quality. But love is a realm in which we live and move and have our being. So in the realm of love, we have the standard of perfection, the standard of integrated being. And what does love, how does love appear in the universe? Well, as the ideal mother. And the mother meaning that which is all-embracing, all-encompassing. No, the mother stands for womb. So love appears as a universal mother, meaning love appears as that all-embracing, all-encompassing, self-operating system that embraces the whole universe, doesn't it? The whole universe is under that complete, total, universal plan of love, where love never loses sight of loveliness. It's so wonderful. In practice there, that's that healing the time and space sense there in divine science, where you say, okay, now how is it I heal the past? It's because at the point of life that life is always providing us out of the infinite well of life, the isness of life, the nowness of life. And at the point of love we see, and that's the all in all, and it has never lost sight of itself, regardless of what the experience looked like, with a false experience in our past, in our childhood, a false experience in the prenatal belief, or in our childhood, or in our adulthood, any false experience that we have had, we see right now that love has never lost sight of loveliness. Love has always been there, whether we know it or not. Love has always been ever-present love, ever-ministering love, all-encompassing love. And we just flood that whole sense of a past, present, and a future only within the all-in-allness of love, never having lost sight of itself, always in its infinite self-containment as an input, process, output, feedback, all-encompassing universal operation. And how does that come to the individual? As the motherhood of love, as that which is fulfilling every single individual situation with the purpose of love, with the goal of love, with the design of love, coming to every single situation, mothering every situation with that universal, all-embracing love. And therefore, how does that come to the human? By blessing all, by never tempting, supporting the struggling heart, including everything within that love, blessing everything within being. Everything within being is blessed. We never leave anything in hell. Everything we see is being blessed. We don't leave a college experience because we better get out of it because evil's happening all around us. We never leave anything in hell. We see that Christ comes to every situation, blessing it, supporting it, ministering unto it, giving good unto it, meeting every human need. Everywhere. We don't have the selfish attitude that, well, I better get out of this situation because it's dangerous. That leaves somebody else in a dangerous situation. It's not an attitude of love. Love blesses everyone. Or we say, well, I better not take this airplane because it may go down, so I'll take the next one. Well, what about all the others who are going on it? See, it's seeing love is always universal. It includes everyone. So we have never leave a situation in hell. We see that everyone, even that's where the one, because fear, hate, jealousy, even that one that hates us, so to speak, the most, so appears to be under a false influence or goes against us the most, we love the most. We turn to hate with love, fear with love, damnation with love. We never greet hate with hate, or fear with fear, or damnation with damnation, or jealousy with jealousy. We greet it with love. That's the true Christian attitude. It embraces everything. With the imparting all good, bestowing all, giving all, meeting every human need. And that gives us a sense in the self opposite that love then gives the ultimatum. It forces the redemption. Of love, it says it forces all of us. How does she say? Love causes us to accept what best promotes our growth. It causes everyone to be within that universal solvent, that ultimate solution. It is the that which is forgives all. It's a universal solvent. It fills every space. It reaches every space. It's a full vacuum. Everyone is reaches that salvation. It brings redemption to all. It brings redemption even to the so-called enemies. It brings redemption to every single situation. And the higher attitude it raises up into us is the willingness to welcome love, welcome salvation for the whole universe, including man, even those who we feel have wronged us, or have wronged the world, or have wronged somebody else. Welcome universal salvation. That's mothering everyone. Mother China, mother, even though China looks like it has done wrong through the martyrdom of some of those who want to go forward, love that the idea will come to the whole universe, including man. That's mothering it all, and seeing that only God is coming on, bringing out its universal salvation, taking the whole universe forward. It's a welcoming consciousness. If we don't welcome the universal salvation, then it appears as that the universe will become annihilated. Or fear. When we don't feel inseparably united to our principle, then we have fear. Fear is always feeling that we're not united to something, that we won't be united to something, that we're not within that all-embracing love. Hate is always... we hate something because we feel excluded, that somebody else has something that we don't have. We're jealous that somebody else is doing something that we aren't doing. We feel outside the system. And so therefore that is all healed by welcoming the universal salvation for the whole universe, including man, which comes from that ideal standard of truth. And that ideal standard of truth being based on what mind tells us, what spirit tells us, what soul tells us, what principle tells us, what life tells us, what truth tells us, what love tells us. That constitutes that ideal standard, you see. So we always look back to the preceding days and say, all right, then that universal plan, that universal blessing, that ideal standard, what is it, we could say? Well, it is, as I said, what the first day mind tells us the universe is. And it's what the second day spirit tells us the universe is. And what the third day soul says. And what the fourth day principle says. And what the fifth day life says. And what the sixth day truth says. And what the seventh day love says. That's the ideal standard, isn't it? That's what it is. And that's the universal, and that's going on within this realm of love. That's the plan. That's love's plan, is what mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love want to bring out in our life. And that's where we live and move and have our being, in that realm of consciousness. So we can see, when we touch an idea, we touch the infinite one. We've touched the first record of creation, and yet we see that tremendous amount of practice. So, as I say, if this is what we receive this week, and it's the only class perhaps we go to, then we say we have something that has touched the infinite one. We have a method of practice, which is a method which touches the infinite one, and when it touches the infinite one, it's dimensional. It touches every situation. Because when you touch the infinite one, you touch science. And science is a self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting system. Science just doesn't stay there in the realm of science itself. It translates itself to the universe, including the individual idea, including right down to the situation, which overcomes everything that doesn't believe in it, you see. So when we always touch the infinite one from any aspect, it has a dimensional operation which heals, always. So we know all we need to know now. With this method of practice, it will solve whatever comes to us. We know we have enough at every step of our way that takes care of every single situation that comes to us. We just have to tonality build. Take it out of the concept, take it out of the letter, and let what we just said become the tone of our consciousness. It goes from a concept into tone, and once it becomes a tone or a value of consciousness, then it becomes our very own being. Because consciousness determines our experience. All right, so we go on and see that if we look on the study aid on page 3, we begin to see where Mrs. Eddy is showing us a very graphical illustration. This is a diagram by Max Kapler of what Mrs. Eddy says on in Prose Works and Science and Health. First of all, showing that we have God, And God just is a circle as the infinite one God. And that God, through the method of analysis, through the prism, you know, that's what Newton used. Newton, as a scientist, used that method of analysis. And also when he worked with his prism, you know, when a white light passes through a prism, it gives you the different hues. And so, therefore, this is just an adaptation from that concept of analysis, where Mrs. Eddy says in Retrospection, Introspection, page 35, science is the prism of truth, which divides its rays and brings out the hues of deity. So what we see then is she, this is what, as we've seen already, is that she uses this method of analysis. That's always the method of a science, to analyze something down into its basic constituents. A science is knowledge reduced to its basic constituents. So what Mrs. Eddy has used that method to take that undifferentiated concept of God that hasn't been defined and has reduced it through the method of analysis, symbolized through the prism, into defining God in its hues as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and the various shades of the hues being the various ideas of those synonymous terms. But a science doesn't stop just as analysis. It also has synthesis, meaning it takes what it has found through the breakup of the infinite one subject. It then puts it all back together, but it synthesizes it. It has a synthesizing process where that which has been analyzed is then seen as working together within a integrated whole. So the method of synthesis is taking all the various points of that have been analyzed, bringing them back together into an infinite reflection. So Mrs. Eddy refers to this process of synthesis in prose works, where she talks about the lens of science. We know that a lens in optics takes the various images, I guess, and brings it together and focuses it. So we see then, she says, that the lens of science magnifies the divine power to human sight. And we see then the allness of spirit, therefore the nothingness of matter. So she says that there's not only the prism of science, which divides God into its basic constituents, but there's also the lens of science, the synthesis process to bring those basic constituents together into what? In Science and Health on page 504, she says, the rays of infinite truth, you see, when gathered into the focus of ideas, brings light instantaneously. So she's saying that whole process that she went through, analysis and synthesis, is for a reason. It's to bring together all the various categories of God are gathered together now into the focal point of ideas, into the focal point of spirit, which brings light instantaneously. Therefore, you see, after the process of analysis and synthesis, we still end up with a focal point, with a circle. But now we have God understood in that focal point. It's that divine infinite calculus understood. So she has gone from God undefined as an amorphous whole through the process of science, analysis and synthesis, arriving at the standpoint of God understood. Now, when we go outside that focal point, something occurs. So let's say that what we have done so far with the days of creation is that we have seen that the biblical writers have also then taken that concept of God and has analyzed God into the first day of mind, the second day of spirit, the third day of soul, the fourth day of principle, the fifth day of life, the sixth day of truth, and the seventh day of love. And now we see that that is brought together, that mind, as if we went on, we could see how mind blends with spirit, and mind blends with soul, and mind blends with principle, and mind blends with life, and mind blends with truth, and mind blends with love. We'll see that as we go on in the synonym study. And how spirit blends with mind, and spirit blends with spirit, and spirit blends with soul. The synonyms are in an infinite reflection, an infinite calculus of reflection, as are their ideas. Then we say, when we go outside that focal point of the first record of creation where God is understood, what happens? Well, she shows that if we go outside by resisting that standpoint of God, she says, what we get then, if we go outside the focal point, she says in Science and Health on page 301, delusion, sin, disease, and death arise from the false testimony of material sense, which from a supposed standpoint outside the focal distance of infinite spirit present an inverted image of mind and substance with everything turned upside down. So when we resist the explanation of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, then mind turns into its opposite. We saw that. When it's misunderstood, mind turns in intelligence, misunderstood turns into ignorance about mind, or spirit misunderstood turns into duality of good and evil, and so forth. So that's the second record of creation. The second record of creation then is that seventh column there. We saw what God looks like when misunderstood. Again, there is only one universe, the spiritual universe, and the second record of creation now just is presenting what that universe looks like as we see now when it is not comprehended. So we're going to really take a look at that last column we looked at, column 7, in the dimensional structuring of the synonym. It's still the spiritual universe, remember, but it's what mind looks like when misunderstood, spirit looks like when misunderstood, soul looks like, principle looks like, life, truth, and love look like when they're misunderstood. So we're not now discussing another creation. Now, this universe then that is turned upside down through misunderstanding is presented then as the second record of creation, so to speak. It's not a real creation. It's just a misunderstanding of the first record of creation. Now, this second record of creation begins then on Genesis 2. Genesis chapter 2:6. So what we will do now is exactly what we did with the first record of creation. We're going to go in with our biblical text interpretation and first ascertain what the biblical symbols are, and then we will later on translate them into metaphysical ideas, and then into the synonymous terms. So what I will do now is read these various points. I think what I'll do is just generally read through the second record. I think I'll read through the whole record so you get a feel of what the record's about. That's also in text interpretation. I didn't do that with the first record, but with the second record, I may just read it through so you can hear it. That is a technique when you read something through quickly just to get the tonality of what it is that we're going to analyze, and then go in and analyze the specifics. So I'll read it through and have it. Sometimes we're not as familiar with the second record as the first. So let me read it through quickly, and I'll have it projected on the screen, and I'll keep putting up the various transparencies. So here we go. It says, "But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. and out of the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, the tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And a river went out of Eden to water the garden, and from thence it was parted and became into four heads. The name of the first is Pison, that is it which compasseth the whole land of Havilah, where there is gold. And the gold of that land is good. There is Delum and the onyx stone. And the name of the second river is Gihon. The same is it that compasseth the whole land of Ethiopia. And the name of the third river is Hiddekel. That is it which goeth towards the east of Assyria. And the fourth river is Euphrates. And the Lord God took man and put him into the garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. And the Lord God said, It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him. And out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air, and brought them unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all cattle, and to the fowl of the air, and to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helpmeet for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept. And he took one of his ribs, and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib, which the Lord God had taken from man, made he a woman, and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed.